You know, when I was putting together the artwork for tonight's stream, I always look to see what the top segment or the big match is going to be this week. And the big segment tonight was that Jon Moxley was going to seize control. He was going to seize the TBS Superstation. Had no idea what that meant, but that's how they've been promoting it all week long. I said, okay, maybe we're going to get a different spin on these Death Rider segments. They all follow the same pattern. They come out through the crowd. They usually beat up on some of the lower card guys on the show. Moxley cuts a very cryptic promo. Maybe some of the other AEW defenders will come out. Big brawl breaks out and the Death Riders take their leave. Usually leaving the AEW contingent laying flat on their faces. But I said, okay, let's see. Maybe they have something different planned here. Maybe we're going to get Moxley at TBS headquarters. Maybe we're gonna get Moxley out in the truck. Maybe Moxley's gonna take over the feed of the show. I'm still sitting here waiting to see exactly how Jon Moxley plans to seize TBS, because the only thing that he seized here on this show was the 1/4 hour that he was in. And it followed the exact same blueprint that these segments usually do. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. The only thing they seized was a cameraman at ringside that Marina Shafir brought into the ring so that he could film the segment. That was it. That was the big segment today. That, my friends, is what you call a bait and switch. That is what that was. So that was disappointing. I thought they were going to be a little creative with it. But we have two new matches now official for Full Gear. One of them was expected. We have Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher. Their match is now set. The other match, probably not a match that most people would have predicted, because right now it looks to be one-on-one, and it's not MJF and Adam Cole. It is MJF and Roderick Strong, the less interesting of the two matches. But it looks like they're headed in a direction that the Roddy match at Full Gear is only part of a larger story heading into what I assume will be the real match at World's End in Orlando at the end of the year. But as of this moment, it does not look like Adam Cole is going to get his hands on MJF at Full Gear. Not unless he runs down to the ring and he interferes in the match. Those two matches have now been added to the card. Cole was in action tonight against Konosuke Takeshita. And Cole had to win this match if he wanted to earn his way into the MJF match at Full Gear. He did not do that, although up until the finish, I thought the two of them had a good match. Better than the one that Cole had last week against Malakai Black. We had a really good main event on this show. Malakai Black, who lost last week, back in tag team action with Brody King. And the two of them took on FTR in a four-way Full Gear Contender Series match. Private Party will be defending their tag team titles against three other teams. We already know who one of those teams is going to be. It's going to be the Outrunners. This was to determine one of their other challengers. The finish of the match surprised me. It was an outcome I was not expecting, but I thought it was a very good main event. Maybe I'm in the minority on this. I thought that there was more to like on this show than not. I thought it was a good show overall tonight. I liked more than I didn't like, and there was stuff I didn't like. But I had more that I liked than not. Maybe I'm in the minority on this, just based on what I saw in the Twitter poll earlier. We'll see. We'll flash that poll later and see where we are, but we will talk about this Dynamite show tonight. This is your AEW Dynamite review for November 13th, 2024. 19 years to the day that Eddie Guerrero passed away. And it's always very sad to look back on that. One of those wrestling deaths, I mean, there's been so many, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, Owen is right up there at the top of the list for me personally. But, you know, when Eddie Guerrero passed away, there were a lot of very sad people. A lot of sad people in wrestling, a lot of sad people in the audience who were fans of his. And even to this day, you feel his influence, whether it's the Eddie shimmy or, you know, the spot where you throw the chair and you drop down, the misdirect there. I mean, his influence is still felt in wrestling to this day, and it's been almost 20 years since he died. It's hard to believe. But yeah, that was 19 years ago today. We here are celebrating 17 years. Of the Sound Off. I started this podcast 2 years after Eddie passed away. Same year Benoit passed away. That's how long I've been doing this show for. So we are celebrating 17 years of the Sound Off all month long. And I thank you for your support. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. You may see them popping up on your screen. We shall see. And if so, I will be reading your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. You know the goal. If you want to be the booker, we will do that later. So get those likes up. Let's talk about this show. Dynamite opened with Christian Cage and Hangman Page. It feels like the two of them should be partners. Taking on Jay White and Juice Robinson. Robinson got sent outside the ring at one point near the Patriarchy. All the Patriarchy members were outside the ring. You had Nick Wayne, Mother Wayne. Always good to see Mother Wayne. Kip Sabian, I could do without him. So he gets thrown out of the ring, basically at their feet. And with the referee distracted, Nick Wayne takes a shot, kicks him in the ribs, right? Referee doesn't see it. So then Robinson, a little while later, he gets dumped out to the floor for a second time. And this time Nick Wayne he's gearing up to do something else, but he's kind of backed up against the barricade. And all of a sudden, behind him in the audience is Hook. And Hook grabs a hold of him and pulls him over the railing. The two of them brawl to the back. We don't see either one of them again for the rest of the show. Late in the match, Jay White avoided a buckshot lariat, immediately countered into a flatliner. Christian was there. He wanted a kill switch. We got the hand of God from Juice Robinson. Hangman got dropped with a sleeper suplex. Jay White delivered a blade runner to Christian into the barricade on the outside. So that wiped him out. Now we have some action in the ring here where Juice Robinson rolls up Hangman. But Mother Wayne has climbed up onto the apron. I can't fault the referee for being distracted. I mean, first of all, every AEW referee is distracted in every match. But, you know, with Mother Wayne on the apron, you can't fault the guy for being distracted. So his attention is diverted there. By the time he turns around, it's two count only. Kip Sabian ended up smashing Robinson in the head with the world title contract case, I guess you would say, because they carry that case around with the contract that belongs to Christian. Sabian was holding it. So he smashed Robinson in the head with it. That allowed Hangman to hit the Deadeye for the win. I thought this was a fun match. It moved some stories along, you know, heading into the pay-per-view. Robinson taking the pin here, I mean, should have been expected because he's the only one of the people in this match that doesn't really have anything going on, you know, heading into the Full Gear show. And they kept the physicality between Hangman and Jay White to a minimum. They went at it a little bit here, but again, you don't want to give too much away heading into the pay-per-view. So I thought this was fine as an opening segment. We had Renee in the back. You're going to hear me saying that a lot here because she was in the back for every segment on this show. And I saw something, what was it, last week? Somebody mentioned that she broke her foot. I can't see because we don't see her feet. Calm down, Rumplemane. But apparently she broke her foot. She's been working on a broken foot. But Renee's a trooper, so she's in the back. And we're going to get a word here with the TBS champion, Mercedes Moné. Now, they're in the hallway. Mercedes walks in. Camille is pulling up the rear. She's basically carrying all of Mercedes' shit. And she got upset when Renee asked about her and Camille trying to run down Chris Statlander last week on the show with their SUV. Mercedes said it's not her fault that Camille can't drive. And she yelled at Camille when she dropped her $20,000 jacket. And then she ordered her to take her stuff into the locker room. Camille, by the way, had her arm in a sling after last week's attack. She tried to run over Chris Statlander with a car. It didn't work. She got out of the car, and Statlander, I think she took the car door and slammed it on Camille's arm, so now she's got a sling. So Camille just looks like an absolute fucking dweeb, okay, from start to finish here in this segment. So she takes Mercedes' stuff and she takes it into the dressing room. And all of a sudden, you know, as Mercedes is continuing to talk to Renee in the hallway, in the background we see Chris Statlander has emerged. And Mercedes turns around, she sees Statlander, and she screams for help from Camille. So now Camille comes out of the dressing room, and as soon as she walks out of the dressing room, Statlander grabs her and throws her into the wall. Shoulder first, right into her bad shoulder. Like I said, total dweeb. That's basically what they have turned Camille into. Statlander, Mercedes, they continue to go at it. Camille gets up, she goes over and tries to rescue Mercedes. And the payoff here is Camille tackles both women through the fake wall. They have the plasterboard and everything. It's like paper mache. And they go right through the wall. And all three women are all just laid out on the ground. So they do this. And Excalibur, he's basically laughing at this. Because what he was doing prior to this segment is they started to have him run down some of the matches for Full Gear, right? Then they cut to this segment. And as soon as the women go through the wall and they're all laying on the ground, you could hear Excalibur on commentary in the background, and he's basically laughing at this and then quickly transitions into a plug for the match between Mercedes and Statlander at Full Gear. And they move on. It's just on to the next. Didn't give it a chance to breathe or anything. It's like, ha ha ha, that was funny what we just saw. These two women are going to have a match at Full Gear. All right, let's move on now. Okay, you know what? Let's move on. I'm not even going to spend any more time talking about this shit. Apparently, it's not important enough. Tony Schiavone. Let's talk about Tony Schiavone. He was in the ring after the break to bring out Will Ospreay. Now we're talking about something that matters here. Future AEW World Champion in 2025. So Ospreay gets in the ring, and the first thing he does is he asks Schiavone if he could leave the ring, because what he wants to do right now, he wants to call out Kyle Fletcher. I mean, why even have Schiavone come down to, why even make him walk from the announce desk on stage? Although I don't even know, were the announcers even on stage tonight? No, they were at ringside. They were at ringside. But why even make him get up from the desk and walk into the ring to do a segment like this? If I would say 85% of the time, they just take the microphone away from him anyway, and they send him off, and he just turns right back around and he leaves the ring. This poor guy has to get up and down, up and down. So Tony left the ring, and out comes Kyle Fletcher. He says if Ospreay lays a finger on him, the family, the Callis family, is going to make him, they're going to put him out even longer than the 3 weeks he missed recently. Ospreay said that he's been in those family meetings and he knows Fletcher isn't alone. So whatever you're going to do, whatever you have planned here, get it out. And Fletcher pulls out the dreaded screwdriver and he tosses it to Ospreay, and Ospreay throws it out of the ring. And this, I don't know. I mean, this was kind of cool because Ospreay has the stupid screwdriver. And the first thing he does, he throws it down on the ground outside, and it just lands perfectly, like, embedded in the mat. I thought that was cool. I don't know how he did that. If that were me, the fucking thing would have bounced right back up, hit me in the head, and knocked me out. So it got embedded in the mat outside. So that was it for the screwdriver. Ospreay starts talking about their history together. He says, this guy here, talking about Fletcher, he lived in my house. I gave him a place to stay during COVID. We fed him. I let him join the United Empire. I even opened the door here to AEW for him. He told Fletcher, you know everything about me. You've even come to my son's school to pick him up with me. He wants answers from his mouth. He doesn't want answers from Don Callis' mouth. He doesn't want to hear it from him. Fletcher said all Callis did was open his eyes to the truth. He goes, yeah, we did all of these nice things. You did all these nice things for me. But who did you really do it for? Did you really do it for me? He said, no. He did it all for himself. It's always about Will Ospreay. Ospreay wanted to mold him into a clone of himself to do all of his dirty work. And he called Ospreay a shellfish. He called him selfish and a shellfish. And he called him a hypocrite. He said all he did was exactly what Ospreay would have done if he was in the same situation. He said, look at Okada. Look at what Ospreay did to Okada. Look at what Ospreay did to Kenny Omega. Ospreay got hot about this, and he said the last time he saw Kyle Fletcher, he was watching him on TV, and Fletcher was shaving his head, repeating over and over again, "I'm nothing like Ospreay. I'm nothing like Ospreay. I'm nothing like Ospreay." And now he's bringing up how he did the same thing Ospreay would have done, just like he did to Okada and Omega. He goes, "Pick a lane, brother. Pick a lane, bruv." He goes, "Are you nothing like me, or are you just an Ospreay clone?" He goes, "Yeah, I stabbed Okada in the back, and I did the same thing to Kenny Omega. But before that, I was a 3-time junior heavyweight champion. I was a 2-time best of the super juniors winner. Every continent that I've ever gone to, I've held gold. So tell me, Kyle, what have you done?" And I don't mean as a member of Aussie Open with Mark Davis in a tag team. You yourself, what have you done? And Fletcher said, "I'll tell you what I'm going to do." See, he dodged the question. He said, "What I'm going to do is I'm going to surpass all of your accolades, and I'm going to do it at Full Gear." Full Gear, he wants Kyle Fletcher one-on-one against Will Ospreay. And Ospreay said, "There it is. That's what it's all about. That's what it's been about this entire time. This boy wants his 5 minutes of fame. He wants an AEW singles match on pay-per-view." He goes, "Around these parts, he's called Mr. Pay-per-view. You want the match? Challenge accepted." And he brings up watching Fletcher shave his head on TV while he had his 6-year-old son sitting with him. And his 6-year-old son, because Ospreay's hand was numb from the Tiger driver that Fletcher had given him that put him out for all those weeks, he couldn't even feel it. He looked down and saw his son holding his hand that he didn't know because he couldn't feel it. And that was because of Kyle Fletcher. He promised to be the one to take this all away from Fletcher at Full Gear. So Brian Cage and Lance Archer, the new Skyscrapers, they come out to the ring. Ospreay laughs and says, "Look, I got some backup too." And Mark Davis and Powerhouse Hobbs, they come in and the brawl is on. Davis and Fletcher, they had a stare down. It didn't last very long. Ospreay took the fight to Fletcher and then he hit a dive outside. Everybody but Lance Archer brawled off. Lance Archer left the ring and he goes down the aisle and it looked like he was heading to the back, but they started playing the Undisputed Kingdom's music because the next match was Roderick Strong against Lance Archer. So they transitioned immediately from one segment right into the next one. So Archer, he's going down the aisle. He's waiting. He's waiting by the tunnel for Roddy to come out. And Roderick Strong did not come out of the tunnel, but he appeared behind Archer and he had a chair. He had a kendo stick. Then he hit him in the back with a kendo stick and they fought to the back. And just like that, we're into the next match. But let me just say, you know, before we get into the next match here, because there's no time to waste here on these AEW shows. You got to go right into the next. But as far as the segment that we just talked about, I thought it was a good exchange between the two of them. You know, Ospreay, when he gets going and he gets very all worked up like he did here in this promo, he tends to be very good. And the fans are into what he has to say. So I thought he did a good job here. He drove home the history between the two of them going back many years. He used his son, right, his stepson, to showcase why he's so worked up, why this is so personal to him. So they introduced a personal element into it. All of that is fine. And that's what you need to do, you know, to build up to what should be a deeply personal grudge match between these two former best friends at Full Gear. So that match now, I think most people expected that to be the match on the card. They were not going to leave Will Ospreay off Full Gear. So that match now is official. But it was right into Roderick Strong against Lance Archer. Falls count anywhere. Now, if Roddy wins this match, then he is guaranteed a match with MJF at Full Gear. Because he had to win 3 matches. So he has to win here. If he can win here, then he gets Max in the ring. So very briefly, they fought in the back. This ultimately ended up in the crowd. Brian Cage showed up. He wanted a chokeslam, powerbomb combo with Archer. But Matt Taven and Mike Bennett showed up to make the save. Bennett and Cage, they brawled away. Archer, he waffled Taven with a big boot. And both men ended up on top of one of the barricades or the guardrails. Archer chokeslammed Taven down onto two security geeks on the floor below. Archer wanted to do the same thing to Roddy, who crotched him on the guardrail, and then he hit forearms before a chair got tossed into the face. Strong then leapt over the barricade, leaping knee strike, covered Archer. It is false count anywhere. And he got the pin. This did not last very long. This went maybe, I didn't clock it exactly, but this went maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes max. And that included a commercial break. So this went a lot shorter than I expected it to. And I think I made this comment last week. We are seeing in real time here the real reason why they put Brian Cage and Lance Archer together. They didn't put the two of them together because they're going to give them some renewed push. Tony Khan finally found Wrestling Jesus, and he decided, hey, you know what? I should probably use this Lance Archer guy. He's a big motherfucker, and I should do more with him on TV. No, he put the two of them together. They've been smashing some jabrones over the last few weeks just to build them up a little bit and make them world beaters so that people like Roddy and Adam Cole could take them down and look impressive when they do so. And that really is the only reason that they put these two guys together. Plain and simple. Roddy, though, he goes to the ring, and he gets the mic, and he screams that at full gear, this all ends, and he's going to finish off MJF. Konosuke Takeshita appeared from behind. He beats down Roddy until Adam Cole charges out. They start slugging it out until a referee comes down to the ring, and it's right into the next match. This was a recurring theme, very noticeable on the show tonight. And where it's just immediately onto the next, just no time to waste. You would think that, you know, Tony Khan, this was the last bit of airtime that he had in AEW. We have to make the most of it. And I am reminded of something that Tony Schiavone talked about. This was many, many months ago on his podcast. I had come across a clip. I don't even remember what it was about. But he mentioned in the... you know what it was? I think it might have been, I'm trying to think if it was the interview he did with Tony Schiavone, with Sean Mooney. But whatever it was, the subject came up of the old event centers that they used to do on TV. And that was a staple of, you know, wrestling shows, WWF and WCW back in the 80s and the 90s. Really through a good part of the 90s, almost into the late 90s, where you would have Gene Okerlund or Todd Pettengill or Tony Schiavone or whoever it was. But they would kind of cut away for a few minutes, and they would have an event center where it would be them in studio, and they would be running down some new matches, you know, just added to the upcoming pay-per-view. They would run down the pay-per-view card. Hey, let's cut to a promo from this guy, an interview with that guy. And it was just their way to do a hard sell for the big show that was coming up. Later that month, let's say. And that's less of an issue these days with WWE because everything's on Peacock. They don't really do pay-per-views. They don't promote their pay-per-views anymore, even though they are still on pay-per-view. But they don't do pay-per-views anymore. So to them, it doesn't matter because they get paid all the same. But AEW was still very much in the pay-per-view business. That might change when they move to Max. But for now, right, they make their money, not all their money, but they make money off their pay-per-views. So Tony Schiavone said he went. Like he does think that they should do segments like that on TV. Right now he does them for their YouTube channel. But he went to Tony Khan. You know, he's got Tony's ear, and Schiavone wears many hats behind the scenes. He has many different responsibilities. And he went to Tony Khan and he made his pitch. And the answer from Tony Khan was no. We're not doing it. And the reason that he gave Schiavone was it has to be nonstop action. We can't let up. It's got to be boom, 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 match, 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 maybe a quick backstage segment, no more than 60 seconds, and then boom, into the next match. It's like he's afraid to let up. And it just has to be constant nonstop action. And I understand sometimes wanting to give the shows a chaotic feel, right? If it was an every now and then thing, it's like when you have a Dynamite or a Raw or a SmackDown that has like a cold open. You don't have the intro. You don't do your usual shtick. you open up and there's a big brawl in the parking garage, you know, or somebody's already in the ring in mid-sentence in a promo. They've commandeered, they've seized the show more than Jon Moxley did tonight, right? That's great. You could do that every now and then. That's very effective. It's like, oh, wow, that's kind of jarring, right? We don't usually start that way. It's different, though, when every single week you feel like you have to keep that pace up and you just can't let things breathe a little bit. If you just announced officially this big match has been added, you know, to Full Gear, maybe cut back to the announcers for 60 seconds, you know, and let them go back and forth and kind of talk about it and play it up a little bit or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a million different ways you could do it, but it's just his mentality, you know, and clearly Tony Schiavone feels like you should be devoting some time to stuff like an event center type thing. And you can slow things down a little bit just to make sure that you're giving your key stories a chance to really break through to the audience. And I'm on Schiavone's side with that. You know, it's Tony Khan's company. He said no to him, and this is the way he's going to do it. It's his play toy, and so whatever. He could do whatever he wants to do. But every single week, you know, when you keep that pace up, I feel like in a lot of situations, you do run the risk of just things, they just kind of go in one ear and out the other because you haven't even given a chance for people to process what they just saw. And there was a lot of that on the show tonight, and I don't see that as a good thing, but that's the way Tony Khan wants to do things. So we went right into the next match, which was Adam Cole one-on-one against Konosuke Takeshita. Cole wanted a Panama Sunrise. Takeshita leveled him with an elbow strike out of midair, and they went to picture-in-picture. Back from the break, Cole hit his Ushiguroshi neckbreaker across the knee, tried a super kick follow-up. Takeshita turned it into a blue thunderbomb for a two count. Cole wanted Panama Sunrise again. Takeshita, though, countered. He swung Cole into the Bastard Driver and then into the Power German. And then he landed a massive lariat and turned Cole inside out. But he kicked out at two. Takeshita missed the big knee and he leapt for a Takeshita line. So as he was coming off the ropes, he went for a flying clothesline. And Cole super kicked him in midair. And then he followed with the Panama Sunrise. Cole dropped the knee pad. He wanted to lower the boom, but Takeshita rolls out to the floor, and he pulls out the Dynamite diamond ring, and he places it on his finger, unbeknownst to Cole, unbeknownst to the referee. They don't see any of this. Cole gets tired of waiting for him, and Adam Cole comes over to the ropes. He leans in. He's going to grab him and pull him back inside, and he gets waffled by a right-hand shot with the diamond ring, knocks him out, KOs Adam Cole. Takeshita rolls back inside. He covers Cole, and he gets the three count. And they cut to more taped footage of MJF. They must have taped, they taped 6 weeks worth of footage in one day with MJF. Basically just like, okay, Max, now sit here and laugh. Now sit here and look angry. Now sit here and smile. All he had to do, one day's work, and you get 6 weeks worth of television, because this is all we've seen from him, because he hasn't been around, because he's been filming movies. He's a fucking big shot now in Hollywood. He's working with Adam Sandler. So they cut to a shot of MJF in his evil lair. He's laughing maniacally, and Takeshita shows off the diamond ring before hiding the evidence. I enjoyed this more than I did Cole's match with Malakai Black on the show last week. The crowd was also more into this, which helped. I'm just happy that they did not pin Takeshita 2 weeks in a row. You get no complaints out of me about them doing that finish because it made sense. I'll tell you why in a second. But my concern was you have the international champion in Takeshita. And Takeshita is great, right? He's got the title. He's got a lot going for him right now. He's a guy that should be as protected as he can be. Last week, he got pinned in the main event by Ricochet, which is fine because Ricochet is going to be wrestling him soon for the title. But to go from pinning him in the tag team match last week to having him wrestle Adam Cole and get pinned again would have been ridiculous. Thankfully, that did not happen. He got a cheap win, but it ties into something we saw on the show last week because if you remember, MJF had one of his minions, some nameless guy, large man, showed up backstage during a Don Callis promo and handed him an envelope full of cash and a ring box. And inside the ring box was the Dynamite diamond ring. So clearly, you know, paying him off to do some dirty work for him. And this right here is what he had in mind. Roderick Strong, he sprinted out and he tried to attack Takeshita, who kicked him low. Takeshita put the ring back on. He wanted to KO him as well when Kyle O'Reilly ran out with a chair and Takeshita bailed. So Takeshita goes up the ramp and he's celebrating and he's holding up his international title. Doesn't see that Ricochet has come out from the tunnel and Ricochet is behind him. Hits a super kick. Takeshita drops the title. He scurries away through one of the tunnels. Ricochet, he sees the international title laying on the ground. And he bends down to pick it up to go pose with it, which he did because you could hear the crowd cheering. The thing is, when he reached down just before he got up to raise the title, they cut to the ring to show Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong. So the people are cheering for Ricochet, but we don't fucking see a thing because they cut away from him. So good job. So that was the end of Ricochet. We didn't see him again after that. In the ring, Kyle O'Reilly, he helps Roderick Strong up to his feet. Adam Cole offers a handshake to Kyle O'Reilly. O'Reilly looks at him, and O'Reilly leaves him hanging, and he walks away. I'm going to tell you right now, I could not possibly care any less than I do right now about this stuff with the Undisputed Era. This is the Undisputed Era right here. We're back to Cole and O'Reilly and Roddy. The only thing missing is Bobby Fish. Where's the lie, right? That's the biggest thing he ever did in his career. So wherever he is right now, he's off fishing somewhere. I don't care about this. I don't. They're building up drama now between these three. Obviously, there's a lot of history here. These men, and Cole and Kyle in particular, right? Future Shock, right? They share a history going back to Ring of Honor. There is a history here involving some or all of these men that spans three different promotions going back a decade plus. I just don't care about it anymore. Like, who cares, truly cares about this stuff here with the Undisputed Kingdom? Kyle O'Reilly, is he going to reunite with them? Is he not going to reunite? Is Roddy going to turn? I can't bring myself to care. I don't give a shit. I don't find any of this interesting. But they're crafting a whole story out of this, and maybe they'll make it interesting in some way. But right now, at this moment, the whole will he, won't he, what's the deal with Kyle? You know, he's been with the conglomeration, but is he going to reunite with his friends? I don't give a shit. Reunite, don't reunite. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. The story here is not that. The story here is Adam Cole losing. And Adam Cole losing this match means that he will not get MJF. Now, I'm pretty sure he had to win three in a row. Is it possible that they could still find a way to get him into the match at Full Gear because he could still win a third match, even if it's not consecutively? I think that would be stupid, but I'm pretty sure it's three in a row that he had to win, and he just lost, which means he does not get MJF at Full Gear. Roddy gets MJF, but not Adam Cole. MJF and Roddy is a far less interesting match to me. The story here is obviously MJF and Cole. But what it appears to me is that they're going to save the match for a World's End. I think the real reason they might want to save the match, let's assume Cole does not make it into the Full Gear card. Not that he won't be there, but that he won't be in the match. I think the real reason is just because MJF has been gone for all these weeks. And if you're going to do MJF against Adam Cole, ideally, you would have MJF on the show. He hasn't been on the show. These stupid cutaways don't count. He has not been on the show. And he told us over a month ago, you're not going to see me again until Full Gear. It's hard to promote a match between these two guys if one of those guys is never on the show. So I think what they want to do is they want to push it off. They want to hold off until World's End. World's End is sort of where everything exploded a year ago when Cole turned on him. It's kind of like full circle. And hopefully, coming out of Full Gear, we will get MJF live and in person on these shows every week so that he can properly build a match between himself and Adam Cole. And that, I think, is probably the biggest reason why we're not getting it at Full Gear. But it's just funny to me how they just changed the stipulation mid-story. You know, remember what MJF said originally when this entire thing kicked off? He said, I'm going to make you jump through hoops, just like he does in all of his feuds as a heel, right? He's got to make the other guy overcome this obstacle or that challenge if he wants to get a match with him. And it was whichever one of Adam Cole or Roderick Strong could first hit three victories will get me at Full Gear in the ring. It's like a race between Cole and Roddy. That's why I thought we were going to get Cole and Roddy in the deciding third match. It's exactly the sort of thing MJF would do because the guy's a scumbag. He would force the two friends to have to fight each other in order to get him. Made sense. And then one week, all of a sudden, the stipulation just changed. The stipulation completely flipped. And it wasn't a matter of, well, this guy has to get the three wins first. It was, if both men can win three matches, then they will get MJF at Full Gear. I'm like, that's not the stipulation I remember, but okay. They decided to change the story in midstream. So that's very weird. I think that's also pretty fucking lazy, to be honest with you, but that's how they decided to do it. Ultimately, I guess they get to the same destination, but that match is now official for Full Gear. MJF one-on-one with Roderick Strong. Back to Renee, who was in the back, very busy tonight. Renee was with the Hurt Syndicate, and she asked Bobby Lashley about his match coming up with Swerve Strickland at Full Gear. MVP decided to cut the promo here, or not promo really, but decided to interview Bobby. He goes, I don't know what journalism school you went to, but I'll take over from here. Asks Lashley about potentially ending a young man's career at Full Gear. Lashley said that he's going to make an example out of Swerve. He's going to hurt him. MVP said that they will be watching his match because he's got a match coming up later tonight against Leo Rush. Yeah, Kyle in the chat says they changed the original story just to go back to the original. It's stupid, but ultimately I think they ended up in the same place they were going to be in anyway. It is what it is. The storytelling is... it's not the best. So anyway, the Hurt Syndicate would be seen yet again later in the show when we get to the Swerve match. But up next, we had the segment that I was very curious to see. All week long, Jon Moxley is going to seize Superstation TBS. He's gonna take over the network. You know, the biggest heel move that he could have done, he could have seized, you know, he could have commandeered the truck or whatever and deleted all of the episodes of Sheldon's show, The Big Bang Theory. Just wipe it clean. He'd be the biggest heel in all of TBS. You would have executives on their knees crying. What's he going to do, right? Well, let's find out. Moxley and the Death Riders. First, though, we see J.D. Drake. Yeah, J.D. Drake. Your favorite wrestler. Stumbles out of the tunnel. He's being attacked. He's being worn out by a steel chair being wielded by Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta. No pack on the show this week. And we're told that Drake was supposed to be competing later tonight. Against who? Who is J.D. Drake going to be coming out and wrestling on this show? I would love to know. Please tell me. And then when you tell me, I would like to know why that match would have been booked for Dynamite and not Rampage. So yet another example here about some guy getting his ass kicked that nobody gives a shit about. All due respect to J.D. Drake, but in the pecking order there, nobody cares. Jon Moxley and Marina Shafir, they storm out separately through the crowd. Looked like Moxley was waiting for his cue so that he finally makes his way out. And Marina Shafir, this right here was the closest thing that we had to them seizing the Superstation all night long. She grabs one of the cameramen and forces him on the apron and into the ring. That was the biggest seize that we had here in this segment. Moxley said that he's been thinking about Orange Cassidy for the past few days and how Chuck Taylor is drinking his food through a straw because Cassidy couldn't save him. A fan in the crowd, because they're running these venues that I can't even call them smaller venues. I don't know the name of the I don't remember the name of the arena they were in tonight, but I think it was maybe a 10,000 seat building, and they didn't have 10,000 people in that building. So when they have smaller crowds like this, they get real quiet during some of the promos, and it just amplifies that one guy. All it takes is one. He had one guy in the middle of Moxley's promo. You can audibly hear him screaming, "Go back to Roman." Moxley just kept going, though. He didn't react to it. He's a pro, right? He just kept going. Well, hey, you know, I hear Roman needs a fifth man in War Games. So I'm just saying, Roman could use him right now. Moxley says that Wheeler Yuta belongs to Moxley because Cassidy wasn't able to save him either. The pressure is building for Full Gear. Cassidy, though, he's cool as a cucumber, hands in his pockets. Moxley is going to make an example out of him at Full Gear. He's going to brutalize him. He's going to stomp his face into hamburger meat so badly his own mother won't recognize him. Everybody who calls themselves a contender is going to run and hide, and they will do whatever the hell they want because they have the power. They're like fucking He-Man. They have the power, I guess, because he's got the world championship that we never see anymore. I guess that's the power. Orange Cassidy's music hits. He very calmly walks out on stage. He's joined by Rocky Romero and Mark Briscoe. And Cassidy agrees with Moxley. It's all because of what's in the briefcase. What is in the briefcase is the symbol of AEW. It represents everything pro wrestling can be. It is the AEW World Championship. Just don't leave it with Chris Jericho, because if you do, he might leave it behind at the steakhouse. Otherwise, it should be safe. He says they can fight all over the place, but the only way to win the title is by wrestling. And he reminds Moxley how he's beaten him once before, and he'll do it again. He does have a win over Moxley at Full Gear last year. Cassidy said a few years ago, Moxley made a comment to him about playing chess and somebody playing chess and the other guy playing checkers, and brings up removing pawns before you can take the king. So next week he's going to wrestle Wheeler Yuta, implying that Yuta is a pawn, and once he beats Yuta, he'll be able to make it to the king, which is Moxley. Yuta is standing in the aisleway with Claudio, next to Claudio, and they're looking up the aisle at Cassidy, who's on stage, and they cut to Yuta, and Yuta is yelling back at him, "I'm no pawn, I'm no pawn." And Claudio just turns and says, "Shut up." He's such a geek, he just says, "I shut up. Just shut up." So Moxley said, we'll see if Cassidy has the guts to pull the trigger on Yuta next week. Come Full Gear. He has one message to anybody who wants what he's got. Abandon all hope. I think there are quite a few fans who used to watch the show who have abandoned all hope. It's sad, but it's true. Just look at some of these crowds. So the Death Riders, they exit through the crowd, and we see somebody all of a sudden in a Sting mask. I think it was a Sting. It was like a purple mask. And he's standing on top of the balcony, and he dives off the balcony. And so if he's diving off the balcony, it can only be one person. And if it's not Sting, who loved to do balcony dives all of a sudden, then you know it's going to be Darby. So, of course, it's Darby Allin. Cassidy and Rocky Romero and Mark Briscoe, they run over, and now there's a big brawl. Moxley and Marina Shafir, though, they bail. They exit stage left, and they exit the building, and they go back to their pickup truck without Wheeler Yuta. So eventually Claudio comes, and they've got everybody except Wheeler, and they're going to leave without him because they don't give a shit about this kid, because like I said, he's just a friggin' geek the way he's treated by his own people. So they don't care. They're going to leave without him. But instead, Darby Allin jumps into the back of the pickup truck. So they stop the truck, and Darby gets out of the truck. Claudio gets out of the back seat, and he grabs, I think Darby jumped at him, and he has Darby. And it's a great distance from where they are back to the garage door. But he's got Darby, and he's just running with him and running with him. And then he slams him into the garage door. And then he delivers a giant swing to Darby into the garage door, which looked great. That was like the highlight of the entire segment, was this fucking swing that he gave him into the door. Claudio gets back in the truck. Yuta finally leaps into the back. and the Death Riders drive off as Mark Briscoe chases after the truck. Meanwhile, the conglomeration, they're checking on Darby, and he's yelling, you know, for Claudio to come back and fight. They're going to have a match on Dynamite next week. That is official. So it will be Darby Allin one-on-one against Claudio. Look, you know, the promos they did here, they were okay. They weren't great. I mean, they weren't anything special. Like the Will Ospreay segment earlier in the show when he cut that fiery promo on Kyle Fletcher. Like, that was a good promo. This was just paint-by-numbers bullshit. You know, even the Orange Cassidy promo, I think it missed the mark. Yeah, with me anyway, it did. And the match itself, you know, look, I know Orange Cassidy has been a staple of this company now for a number of years, and to the AEW audience, he's over, whatever that even means these days. I say he's over. Does that mean he's over to the point of doing big business and doing big ratings for them? No, but he gets a reaction when he goes out there, so they like him. But Jon Moxley against Orange Cassidy, which was a middle-of-the-card match at Full Gear last year, as the main event for one of their biggest shows of the year, it just doesn't quite hit the same as when you look at some of the other Full Gear main events that we've had, many of which have included Jon Moxley, by the way. I think there was an unsanctioned match at the very first one with him and Kenny Omega. You had Kenny Omega against Hangman Page. You had MJF, right, against Jon Moxley a couple years ago, I think it was. So this is hardly a big marquee match here. But this is the story they're telling, and, you know, they're taking over. They're seizing things. And so AEW's trying to stand up for itself and fight back. And the story is not really clicking yet, but Cassidy is only the first challenger. Darby is probably going to be number two. Are they going to bring in other big names into this if this story is still being told early next year? Is Kenny Omega going to step up? Is Will Ospreay going to get involved? Is somebody we're not thinking of going to get involved? I don't know. You know, we'll see. But right now, you know, they're coming out, they're being very cryptic, and they're, you know, it's like Moxley's talking in riddles sometimes. You know, we're changing this place, we're taking over, things are going to be different, you don't understand, it's for the greater good, and, you know, it's not hitting home with me yet. We still have to let the story play out, see exactly what they have in mind for it as we then go into World's End. Is there some kind of big payoff to all this? Fuck if I know what it is. But this is the story that they're telling right now. And evidently, Jon Moxley has been given carte blanche when it comes to his storyline. He's been given great creative freedom. He's basically booking this story himself. I'm sure Tony Khan has input into things that he maybe thinks they should do, but he's largely just rubber stamping whatever Moxley is coming up with here. He has to approve everything, but this is Moxley's brainchild. That's the faith he has put in Jon Moxley, who has bled AEW, literally bled AEW for 5 years now. He's been with this company, right? He's their lead soldier. Tony Khan is putting his faith and trust in Jon Moxley to deliver them to the promised land with this storyline. So far, it's not happening. But we still have to let it play out a little bit more and see if maybe things will improve. Maybe things will get more interesting. It's just not interesting. It's just not that interesting. Maybe that'll change. But this here, it was just, it felt like a bait and switch. The way they promoted this segment, I thought they were going to try to just depart from the usual Death Rider stuff that we've been getting and try something a little bit different. Again, maybe they would have, you know, broken into the truck and tried to just fuck with the show. Now, and as this, maybe J.D. Drake is going to wrestle a match and then you cut to Moxley in the truck. Now we're not going to watch that. Fuck that. Let's cut away from that match. You know, this is our show now. We own this place. This is all about us. You know, something different. And they didn't deliver that here. It was just more hype than anything else, just to give us the same copy and paste promos that we've been getting from this guy now for the last few weeks. Commandeer the truck. Do something. You promised that you were going to basically invade the network. I'm still waiting. Renee was backstage. She asked if Chris Jericho accepts the challenge of Tomohiro Ishii to a Ring of Honor World Championship match in Chicago on Dynamite in 2 weeks. Jericho said that he's got a soft spot for Ishii because they've known each other for nearly 30 years. When Ishii was a young boy who carried his bags and washed his back in the shower. TMI. I don't need to know about that. Jericho also brought up their match 2 years ago in Chicago on Dynamite, which is one of his favorite matches. They showed some highlights. Jericho bled from the chest. He got chopped so many times. He was bleeding from the... When I say bleeding, he was bleeding from the chest. So he loved it, and he wants more of it. So he accepted the challenge. On a brighter note, because the less said about Jericho on these shows at this point, the better. On a much happier note, Excalibur mentioned on commentary that in 2 weeks, on that same show, I guess, the Continental Classic is going to be kicking off. I was very excited to hear that. Last year's tournament was excellent, so I'm looking forward to year two. Okada, of course, right now is the reigning Continental Champion. He has not wrestled a match in a month. And it might have something to do with the fact that he and his wife just gave birth to a bouncing baby boy. This is their second one. So another little rainmaker brought into this world. So congrats to the two of them. We have the return of Britt Baker. One-on-one with Penelope Ford. Britt was sick a month ago. Maybe she had the strep throat. I don't know if she may have had some other illness, but we have not seen her in a while. This was her return. During the match, Penelope Ford went for a moonsault. Baker moved out of the way, so she splatted on the mat. Britt hit a thrust kick and a spinning neck breaker. But she took way too long to put the glove on for her lockjaw finish. So Ford drop kicked her from behind and then applied the Muda Lock. So she's got Britt Baker trapped in the Muda Lock. When in mid-move, Britt Baker, locked in this hold, takes her hand, maneuvers it around, and applies lockjaw. And then eventually she's able to maneuver herself around into her normal position, applies the hold fully. Penelope Ford has nowhere to go. She taps out. I thought that was a very clever finish. I mean, the match itself was nothing out of the ordinary. It was a match. But the finish, I thought, was very clever. I really like that. Coming up with a creative way to apply the hold and getting the win with it. So I did like that. After the match, Serena Deeb walked out on stage with her flag. She takes that flag everywhere with her. And she and Britt had a long distance stare down. Britt's last match was against Serena Deeb. She beat Serena Deeb. So obviously they're just picking up where they left off with these two. Say it with me now. Renee was backstage with the returning Mina Shirakawa. Oh, yes. Mina is back. She says she's missed Mariah May so much. Cannot wait for the champagne celebration with her when she beats Anna Jay on Collision. All of a sudden, Harley Cameron showed up, pounded the glass of champagne that was in Mina's hand. She just pounded it backwards and tossed it aside. And said that some say that Mina is the Harley Cameron of Japan. She challenges Mina to a match on Collision. Tit for tit. May the best woman win. Those are the best matches, aren't they? The tit for tit ones. Those are my favorites. It's always nice to have Mina on the shows. She's always got that very bubbly, very bouncy personality. It's her personality, of course. We had Swerve Strickland one-on-one with Leo Rush. I mean, look, you knew how this was going to go. Doesn't take away from the fact, though, I thought these two had a good match. Both men traded corkscrew counters in the ropes. Leo tried a springboard. Swerve dodged. Leo backflipped to the floor. I mean, this you see a lot of this in the Leo Rush matches, where you're trying to catch this guy, and you just can't catch him because he's so tiny and he's so quick. Later on, though, Rush managed a misdirect Spanish fly for a two count. Then he tried a leaping Hurricanrana off the announce desk. Swerve caught him. He looked for a powerbomb, only for Leo to leap out onto the steps and hit a poison Rana. Back inside, he had a frog splash for a close two. The bounce back stunner is countered by Swerve, who wanted big pressure. Rush rolls through into a pin, held the ropes. Prince Nana, though, pointed it out. He wanted another Poison Rana, but this time Swerve powered him into Big Pressure and pinned him for the win. No surprise there. After the match was over, Swerve took the microphone and he said, now he's back. Now that he's back, everybody wants to use his equity and his accolades to make a statement. Tonight it was Lio Rush. Shelton Benjamin tried a few weeks ago. But he's going to have to keep reminding people whose house it is. While their match may be at full gear, he wants to fight right here tonight in Stamford. There's just one problem with that. They were not in Stamford. No Stamford tonight. They were in Bridgeport. And the fans knew where they were, and the fans were not very happy about that, and they booed. And they let him have it. He didn't see, now maybe he realized what he did and just didn't sell it, but he didn't seem to really pick up on it. He just kind of continued on. But the fans let him have it. I mean, look, it's bad enough calling them by the wrong name, right? But I think what really kind of drove the knife in there, of all the places to mistake them for, fucking Stamford. Like, you know what's in Stamford. You're going to call them Stamford. Like, that's the worst thing you could say to an AEW audience here in this city, is to call them Stamford. So they didn't like that very much. It's not the Silverdome, Hogan. It's the Superdome. So the Hurt Syndicate's music hits, out walks MVP and Bobby Lashley. MVP said that if he wanted to fight with the member of the Syndicate, all he had to do was ask. And the crowd is chanting, this is Bridgeport, this is Bridgeport. As Lashley takes his jacket off, MVP then says there's strength in numbers. So naturally, Shelton Benjamin jumps Strickland from behind, tosses him to the feet of Bobby Lashley outside, who launches Swerve repeatedly into the barricade. Lashley went into the ring after Prince Nana. He launched him into the corner. He tossed Swerve into the ring, and Benjamin put Swerve down with a DDT. MVP used his pimp cane to restrain Swerve while Lashley and Benjamin continued to work him over. Lashley put Swerve in the Hurt Lock. A bunch of referees ran out. Lashley let go of the hold. Nana went to go check on Swerve, and Lashley tossed Prince Nana into the corner. I thought this, again, the match was good, and I liked the segment here. I liked the back and forth here between Swerve and the Hurt Syndicate. Looking forward to the match with him and Lashley. This will be Lashley's first match, I assume, at full gear. But yeah, the crowd let Swerve know exactly where they were tonight. It's Bridgeport. It's like, what's Jericho's thing? It's Winnipeg, you idiot. People said he was from, where did people say he was from? Toronto or Montreal or something? I'm from Winnipeg, you idiot. People let Swerve know, we're from Bridgeport. We're not from that shitty Stamford. Renee was back. Yo, I'm going to record myself, and every time I get to one of these segments, I'm just going to push play. Renee was backstage. At least put her in a different location. Put her in her car or something. Like, literally, she's sitting in her car, and the camera pans over, and in the passenger seat is the person that she's going to interview. Maybe she's in catering. She's sitting there. She's got some coffee cake on the table or whatever. Camera pans over. Somebody else is sitting there with a ham sandwich. Just to change things up a little bit, you know? Maybe she'll be in the arena once. She'll be in the ring. Renee is backstage with Jamie Hayter, and she wants to know what's next. I'm sure Jamie Hayter is asking the same question when she gets to the building every single week. Hayter said, that's a good question. She's come back to the right to right the wrongs. She's corrected some of them, but now she's thinking of one thing. And before she could finish, they cut away. They cut away to a video here, a vignette, with Julia Hart. We already had a Julia Hart vignette on Collision this past weekend, so now we have another one. And in this one, she awakens from her bed after being shot in the heart with an arrow in the last vignette. She's got blood on her shirt. The phone rings. It's the old school phone, the home phone. Answers the phone. It's Brody King. And Brody King tells her it's time to come home. And she walks over to the mirror, screams as she puts on her black hat, and she steps out the window. I thought this was all well done. I don't expect there to be any change in her character when she returns. It'll probably be the same Julia Hart we remember from before. But I thought that so far these vignettes, I'm digging these vignettes for Julia. Speaking of things that I was digging on this show, I was digging this main event. This was the best part of the entire show here. We had the main event of FTR taking on the Kings of the Black Throne, Malakai Black and Brody King, in the Full Gear Contenders Series. So the Outrunners have already qualified. We already know they're going to Full Gear. They're going to be wrestling Private Party as part of the four-way match for the AEW Tag Team titles. This match here would decide one of the other challengers, and then there's one more match after that yet to come. Private Party came out. They sat on stage in a roped-off area. They had their own security guard. They watched the match from there. Early in the match, there was a huge back body drop by Brody King. He launched Cash Wheeler into the stratosphere with this back body drop. So FTR kept Malakai isolated during a what I believe was the last commercial break before Brody was able to make the tag. King ran wild with chops, shoulder tackles, overhead throw to Wheeler. Harwood got sent into his partner in the corner, and then King hit the cannonball. Brody wanted a superplex on Cash Wheeler. Harwood, though, saved his partner, and that allowed Wheeler to try a sunset flip, with Harwood hitting a diving clothesline into the powerbomb for two. So the match broke down late. Black was sent outside. Brody got sent to the corner. FTR wanted the powerplex, and King took the superplex, but then he got the knees up on Wheeler. Malakai flew off the top with a double stomp on Harwood. Dante's Inferno attempt got blocked. Wheeler saved his partner, sent Brody into Black, and then connected with a shatter machine, but Malakai pulled Dax outside. Dax recovered, and FTR hit a spike pile driver to Malakai Black on the apron, and he fell over to the floor. But Brody King comes flying out of the ring like a missile and wipes out both members of FTR. King drags Dax to his feet in the ring, gets him in the rear naked choke, and Dax Harwood goes nighty-night, and the referee calls for the stoppage. So the House of Black pick up the win over FTR, which means they're moving on to Full Gear, and FTR is not. After the match was over, Brody gave a little nod to Malakai, and they helped Harwood and Wheeler to their feet, shook their hands, paid them respect. Private Party watched on as the show went off the air. Hell of a battle here between these two teams, right? Two great teams here. And a nice rebound for Malakai Black after that loss to Adam Cole on the show last week. Also a much better match here than the one that he had with Adam Cole. I just did not like that match. The finish surprised me. I thought FTR was going to go over, especially they've been very chummy lately with the Outrunners. So I thought maybe they would work something between those two teams. They've been very friendly. But it was not to be. So the finish kind of caught me off guard there. And it wasn't just that Malakai Black lost to Adam Cole last week. Buddy Matthews lost to Adam Cole. So two members of the House of Black already suffered singles losses in the last few weeks. They needed this win here more than FTR did. So it was, again, a good rebound win, really, for the both of them. They've punched their ticket. And again, I came away from this show liking more than I didn't like. So the big thing I didn't like, really, was the Moxley stuff. I thought that was very misleading. And it was very underwhelming. I thought they were going to do something a little bit different. It was more of the same. They did shoot the angle in the parking lot, I guess, to set up the singles match with Darby and Claudio next week, which should be fun. But yeah, I did not like the Moxley segment. And there were some other things on here we could talk about. And I've already talked about, you know, the change in the storyline with Cole and MJF and the stipulation. And it's just silly because I think we all ended up in the same place anyway. The Roddy match, I'm not really a fan of it, but it's part of the story they're telling. They want to put some distance still between MJF and Adam Cole and hold off on the match. So this is what they came up with to do that. I'm sure Adam Cole will play into the match in some way, even if he's not officially part of it. But the Ospreay promo with Fletcher, the main event here, some of the other stuff we talked about, I thought overall it was a good show. You know, Dynamite has settled into, you know, a pattern here with how they do these shows. And you just have to understand that these shows don't have the same energy and enthusiasm that they used to. And part of that is the fact that the crowds are smaller. That's just something that has been the case now for a while. They really struggle to put people in these buildings. I wish they would run smaller buildings because, again, some of these buildings are still 10, 12, 15,000 seat buildings, and it's very noticeable when you only have, let's say, 3,000 or 2,500 people in those buildings. It just, it can't match the energy of what Dynamite used to bring. But as far as building to the full gear card and some of those matches and some of the matches on the show that we had here, I thought they did what they had to do, you know, to move some of these stories ahead, which is, you know, the main thing that you asked for coming into these things. To that end, I thought they did a pretty good job. Now, we're looking at Collision this weekend. We have Mariah May defending the Women's World title against Anna Jay. It's going to be a no disqualification match. If Anna does not win, she can never again challenge for the championship so long as Mariah has it. We have the Acclaimed taking on La Facción Ingobernables, which is going to be Rush and the Beast Mortos. I guess Jake Roberts should be out there in their corner. We haven't seen Jake Roberts. I don't think we've seen Jake Roberts on this show. I'm talking Dynamite. I don't know that we've seen Jake Roberts a single time since the trade went down with him and Don Callis. So he should be there in their corner on Collision. Just thinking, who goes over in that match? So we have Private Party is in, the Outrunners are in, the House of Black is in. It comes down to this. If it's me, I'm putting LFI in there. You know, honestly, the Acclaim to me is just, it's a dead act right now. I have no interest in the Acclaimed. LFI with Jake presumably in their corner, that's something new. I don't know why you wouldn't want to push that. So I'm kind of hoping they go on to full gear. Mina Shirakawa takes on Harley Cameron, and Johnny TV is going to be wrestling Daniel Garcia. Dynamite next week, we have two matches already announced. Orange Cassidy is going to take on Wheeler Yuta, and Darby Allin is going to take on Claudio Castagnoli. And that is what we know. And if you missed the news, Tony Khan has obtained the rights. He has secured the rights from Guns N' Roses to November Rain. And he is going to use the song November Rain in some of the promo packages building to full gear. And apparently as part of, I guess, the promotion for some live tour they have coming up. But he made that announcement on social media yesterday. So if you're going to hear some Guns N' Roses on the show, that's why. He's calling it AEW's November to Remember. What did you think of Dynamite from Bridgeport, not Stamford? 34.7% thumbs up, 65.3% thumbs down. Well, I guess the people have spoken. A big thumbs down from the Twitter folk for tonight's show. But I enjoyed this Dynamite more than a lot of the other ones we've gotten in the last few weeks. So there you go. That's how I felt about the show. Let's take a look at your super chats here. Thank you for the support. We are less than 50 likes away from the goal, but we are still lagging on the goal for Be the Booker. So if you want to do Be the Booker, get those likes up. All right, let's take a look here, and let's begin with Josh Carlos, who I hope is having a great night. Good to have you with me, Josh. Dropping a $9.99. Said, it's Eddie Guerrero's unfortunate anniversary of his passing. One of my favorites of all time. Can you name some of his all-time greatest matches? I loved Eddie versus Brock. Incredible moment afterwards. It was an incredible moment because his family, his mother was there in the front row. It was a great moment. Eddie's greatest match, in my opinion, is, I always used to say Eddie and Ray from Halloween Havoc in 97. But just based on the emotion of it, it's got to be Eddie and Brock in No Way Out in 2004. So when I think greatest Eddie Guerrero matches, I automatically think of Eddie and Brock. Eddie Brock. I think of Eddie and Ray from Halloween Havoc 97. There was a match on SmackDown in 2002. I think it was a no DQ match between Eddie and Edge. It was one of those matches that really helped put Edge on the map as a singles competitor. Kurt Angle is really the one who did that for him in 2002. They had a couple of great matches, but that SmackDown match against Eddie was a huge one for Edge. And then, you know, you look at Eddie and Benoit. They had a match just going on WWE. They had a match at Vengeance. I want to say it was 2003. I think they opened the show for the U.S. title. I remember that being a really good match. You can go back to when Worlds Collide in 94, when it was Eddie and Art Barr, you know, tag team match. Those are the Eddie Guerrero matches that stand out to me. And I'll throw one more at you. And I think it was the only match the two of them ever had. But Eddie had a match with The Rock. It might have been a title match. It was on an episode of Raw in the summer of 2002. And I will always remember Eddie countering out of the Rock Bottom, because I've never seen that before. That's the moment that stands out to me. That was a fun match. Yeah, somebody mentioned Eddie and JBL. Eddie and JBL had that bloodbath at Judgment Day in 2004. Then they had the Bull Rope match. But I guess you could put Judgment Day, 04. Although it's really more known for the blood at the end of it. But yeah, I mean, Eddie had some great matches. So if you're looking for a sampling of matches to go check out, there you go. That'll keep you busy for a while. Eddie and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 20 is another one. Devin from NJ said there was a super chat from Monday. Well, I did. I read it off the air, and then I acknowledge you in the chat. And yes, I do agree with what you said about Dave and his sources. I do agree with you. So thank you, Devin. Oz and Glorious with the five. Everything seemed off tonight. The pacing, all the promos, the overused run-ins, even the wrestling. It just did not hit for me tonight. You didn't like that main event? I thought the main event was really good. But yeah, the pacing was just very chaotic. It's what I talked about before. I'm not saying that you have to slow the show down to a snail's pace, but you need to give things a chance to breathe. And they just don't do it. They don't let up. It's like, we got to go from one to the next, to the next, to the next, and nothing really registers. And that's part of the problem, I think. I think that's part of the problem. That's the way Tony likes it, though. He also says, I really need a break from Orange Cassidy, DMD, MJF, Jericho Mox, Private Party, Briscoe Garcia, Commander, Top Flight, etc. Basically, you need a break from the entire roster, is what you're saying. You just named half the fucking roster there. Need Samoa Joe and Eddie back, ASAP. Well, you're not getting Eddie back, ASAP. I don't think you really fully appreciate the severity of the injury that Eddie sustained. We're not getting Eddie back at least until May. Samoa Joe, though, is ready to come back. Joe could be back any day. Maybe Samoa Joe is the one who comes back. Because Final Battle is coming to the Hammerstein Ballroom next month. And Jericho will beat Ishii in a couple of weeks. Maybe Samoa Joe returns to Ring of Honor to vanquish the Learning Tree. And take the championship. Actually, you know what? The last time we saw Joe... Was the last time we saw Samoa Joe and Jericho put him through the fake wall with the forklift? I believe it was. There you go. There's your Final Battle main event right there. Samoa Joe taking back the Ring of Honor World Championship and beating Chris Jericho at the Hammerstein Ballroom. There you go. He's ready to come back. He's done filming the Twisted Metal stuff, so it makes sense. It makes sense. There's your Final Battle main event. Book it. I won't be there. I'll be at the NYC Arena that night because they're running that fucking show the same night that House of Glory is running in Queens. So that's where I'll be. But Samoa Joe should be the one to beat him for the belt. Jerome Eugenio says, Happy Wednesday, everyone. Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday to Jerome, and happy Wednesday to everybody else. Thank you, sir. Carlos Galvan says, Solomonster is seizing YouTube. Dude, I seize YouTube at least three times a week. It basically belongs to me at this point. Where are we on the likes, by the way? I think we're still behind the goal. Not good. Hey, K-Dog's Kennel. 3 months of membership. Not a fan of tonight's show, so I will settle for Solo's review, which will be better. Well, that is undoubtedly true. You'll always find something you like here on these streams. Thank you, sir. Dev to Dust with a $10 super chat. Steven Spielberg's first movie, Duel, is a great movie. It's pretty much Jaws on wheels. Also, I noticed the first Terminator film is basically the sci-fi equivalent of John Carpenter's Halloween. Well, Halloween and Jaws and the Terminator are all great movies, but I have never seen Duel. I don't even know what it's about. I may have to check that out. RD Beats with the 10 spot. Dylan Hensley. Just wanted to promote AAPW and that we were forced to relocate. So far, we haven't found a new place yet, so we at AAPW would appreciate support from you guys. Well, showing love to the folks at AAPW. Dylan's always trying to keep us in the loop on his wrestling journey, so it's good to hear from you, brother. The Meal Slayer with the $4.99. Found myself going down a rabbit hole of old Shield videos from their first run the other night. Makes part of me wish Moxley never left. Rest in peace, Eddie. I don't blame Moxley for leaving. Moxley had no idea that the change in ownership and leadership was coming in that company. He had to get out. If you go back and look at what they had him doing at the time, you would have left too. It was ridiculous. He had to leave. I don't blame him for leaving. What they had him doing would have chased anybody away. Noel Mulligan. Hi, Solomonster. I saw Metallica twice in Dublin. They were very good, but was surprised when Hulk Hogan was not playing support. Well, apparently he was probably off hawking his beer at a Walmart somewhere, so he wasn't able to play bass for Metallica that night, so they had somebody stand in for it. Hello, the Full Gear pre-show match better end with the Rizzler going through a table. Yeah, everybody keeps talking about this Rizzler. I may have to check that out. Carlos says, who are your early picks for the Continental Classic? I mean, before he won the international title, I was hoping and thinking we would get Takeshita against Okada. They started to tease it, and then they completely ditched it. So, I mean, I'm glad he has a championship now, but I don't know. It seems unlikely unless he's going to drop it to Ricochet. If Takeshita drops the international title to Ricochet, then I go with Takeshita to win the Continental Classic. Beyond that, I need to see who's going to be in it. I could rattle off a dozen different names of people on that roster, including Ricochet, by the way, who would be good candidates to win that tournament, but I need to get a sense of who's going to be in it. Who are the 12 men that are going to be in it? And then we can kind of narrow it down. Maybe Joe will be in it. I think Joe is going to wrestle Jericho. El Masse, guess we already need a reset from this reset. Do you think Shane coming in is still a possibility, and would he be able to do much at this point? I have heard nothing about Shane. All the Shane buzz has died down, just like it would have anyway if he did come in. I have no interest in seeing Shane McMahon. I can't say this enough times. I have no interest in seeing Shane McMahon on TV, and if they bring in Shane McMahon, it will not make a lick of difference. It won't. Even if they bring him in a behind-the-scenes capacity, it will not matter. People are fantasizing about this. They're romanticizing the idea of a McMahon coming in to work for Tony Khan. Oh my God, this would be incredible. Just the sight of it. Yeah, it would be incredible on week one. And then within a few weeks, Shane would become just another member of the roster. And it won't make a lick of difference. I don't see what introducing Shane is going to do to make this story, to kind of elevate this story to that next level. It could happen, but I've heard nothing in that direction, so I don't think it's happening. Jeremy Rose. Maybe Shane was going to come in and then he watched the show. And he's like, fuck this, I'm out of here. This is what they want to bring me into, this story? I don't want to have anything to do with this. I have a reputation to uphold here. Jeremy says, what's worse, current AEW, WCW 99-01, or WWE 2019? You know, again, I feel like when people mention WCW, that late stage WCW, they either never lived through it or they forgot how fucking awful it got there at the end. Maybe not 99 necessarily. It was really 2000. But he, you know what? Even in 99, even in the certainly the latter part of 99, it was bad. It was bad. And then as far as 2019 WWE, that was just fucking awful. So I think I would put both of them, frankly, over current AEW. I mean, that's how bad it was. I had checked out from WCW. I was never the biggest WCW fan to begin with, but I was completely checked out of the product at that point. And having lived through 2019 WWE and reviewing it every single week, I think that might be at the top. BCOM, see clearly, for there is always light. If only we are brave enough to see it. If only we are brave enough to be it. Amanda Gorman, that saved life. That's a very deep quote. Thank you, BCOM, see clearly. Brian Ramos, spoiler. Darby AEW champion, Revolution 2025. 1 year since Sting retired. Also, can you explain what happened to the call-ins after the reviews? It was cringe, but overall entertaining. Bring it back. People didn't want it anymore, so I stopped doing it. Simple as that. It could come back one day, but it would be maybe like a one-off. I would consider it, but people didn't want it, and we just moved on. We evolved. Uffman Entertainment is, if MJF is still filming Happy Gilmore 2, then that means he's here in Jersey. They are currently filming in my hometown of Kearney, New Jersey. I would think he's done filming at this point, but I don't know. If he is filming, then that's where he would be. Jeremy says, I'm supposed to believe the likes of Orange Cassidy and Darby Allin are world champion caliber. It's a joke. You don't see WWE selling Gable or Escobar as world title contenders. Chad Gable could absolutely be a fucking world title contender. And I will not tolerate Chad Gable slander here on this channel. Now, he has not been built up in that direction and clearly never will be. But to imply that he could never be a champion or you can take somebody like him seriously... Yeah, you can't take him seriously because he's been booked as a fucking joke. But if he had strong booking behind him, then absolutely, Chad Gable could compete for the World Heavyweight Championship. Darby Allin is somebody who's like a human crash test dummy. But he's beloved by the AEW audience. And they did a very smart thing, I think, by aligning him for so long with Sting. And Sting did give him a rub. I think that did benefit Darby. Darby is somebody, he's on the smaller side, but Darby I could see as an AEW world champion. Not having a long run, but could I see him being the champion? Yes, and I think he will be. I think he will be the AEW world champion at some point. I don't know if it'll be Revolution, like Brian just mentioned. But there are definitely people on that roster who, I'll use Daniel Garcia as an example. Do I see him being elevated to AEW World Championship status? I'm not saying Tony Khan wouldn't try it, but I sure as fuck wouldn't believe in it. Because I don't think he's somebody who is in a position where I would want to see him in that role. That's not a role that I can believe him in. That's how I feel about him. I don't feel that way about Darby, though. Darby just has this weird charisma and energy about him. Again, the fans love him, and he goes out there, and you can't say that he doesn't have interesting matches. Usually, it's like the Mick Foley thing, where he spends 90% of it taking abuse and taking punishment. But, you know, there are other people on that roster who I would agree with you on, but I wouldn't have Darby in that conversation. Boots, do you recall the Raw episode when William Regal went into the production truck and took Raw off the air? Moxley should have done something similar. Oh, there would have been a lot of fans who would have loved it if Moxley took the show off the air. Yeah, I mean, anything. Anything would have been better than what they did tonight. Jeremy says, do you think the talent care about how bad the product is, or do they just care about the easy money from Tony? I think you have a lot of big names there who are more than happy to take Tony's money and work one day a week. I mean, think about it. It's a pretty sweet gig for them, right? They don't have to work house shows. They can book their own shots. So if they want to work an indie date here and there, they can book their own dates. But it's entirely up to them. Otherwise, they're getting paid handsomely by Tony Khan. And literally, they're working once, maybe twice a week, not counting pay-per-views. And they're probably getting paid a boatload of money. A sweet gig for them. I think there are absolutely people on that roster who look at AEW basically as a retirement package for them. And then I also can guarantee you there are talents that work there and are younger who perhaps are not being featured in the way they want to be featured, who are very frustrated and upset by the lack of television time that they get. You have both. The Juliet, favorite Eddie Guerrero memory. Rest in peace, Eddie. I think it would be him winning the title from Brock. It was such a great moment, and in that city, you know, in that venue, it was just perfect. Outside of that, is there a favorite Eddie Guerrero moment? I don't know about moment. I have a lot of fond memories of some of the Los Guerreros skits that they did on SmackDown back in like 02, 03. Eddie was a funny guy. Like, there's some funny promos, but maybe, you know what? Maybe, you know what I got a kick out of? The Mamacita stuff when he was courting China back in 2000. I thought that was fun. The WrestleMania 20 ending. Yeah, I try to block that out of my mind. It's just too sad. It's too depressing. Like, at one time, that was just a wonderful moment. And now it is so depressing, I try not to even think about it. Michael. Adam Cole feels like more of a project than a star right now. Looks like a shell of his former self. He does. How much of that is him just coming back from that long layoff and trying to get back to where he was before? I'm sure that's part of it. But I agree. I mean, he does kind of look like a shell of what he used to be, but he's only three matches in. I think you got to give the guy a little bit of time here to try to get himself back to where he was. He's barely been back in the ring. Prince Vegeta, doesn't matter if it's Swerve, Ospreay, Okada, Danielson, or Hangman, the snowman will put Moxley over all of them. What a fucking crime. Hey, you know what? Moxley was always his go-to guy whenever shit went sideways. When shit went sideways with CM Punk, Moxley was his guy. People go down with injury, Moxley was his guy. Moxley was the Iron Man last year for that company. Tony Khan relies very heavily on him, and now he's trusting him enough to allow him to essentially book his own storyline. So clearly he thinks a lot of Jon Moxley and has protected him greatly over these last 5 years. He doesn't get beat clean very often. You would hope that when he finally does, it means something, and that whoever beats him is going to be the right person who does it. But yeah, no, he's heavily protected, and Tony loves him. Avwunu says, Camille, thanks for coming. You were great for about 1 week. Solo, best of seven, 20 minutes per match. Great Kali against TNA Scott Steiner or Satnam Singh against Oldberg. Choose or return to guest host Raw Era. How do you even come up with these? Like, what kind of warped section of your brain comes up with these different scenarios? A best of seven? I would rather return to the guest host of Raw Era. I don't need a best of seven with any of those men, let alone 20 minutes per match. Can you imagine Goldberg in a 20-minute match in a best of seven series? That's 20 times seven. Goldberg, he wouldn't survive two. He wouldn't survive two. He would be sucking so much wind. Not only would he not survive, the first five rows would die because he would suck up all the oxygen and they wouldn't have any oxygen to breathe and they would all croak. Jeremy says, all, some, or none. Which of these eventually returns to WWE? Joe, Mox, or Black? I'm going to say Black. Malakai Black eventually will be back in WWE. George Sekman, I hope Joe comes out after the Jericho match. I think he will. We've got Groovy Goose celebrating 31 months of membership. Look at this. Thanks for the streams and the videos. You're very welcome. Thank you, Groovy Goose. And Justin G gifted a Sound Off membership to David Mao. Thank you, Justin. Let's be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Speaking of TNA, here's someone who spent too long in TNA. He should have come to WWE at least 5 years sooner. Think of all the matches we could have had with this guy. There's Sting. Sting and his sons. Tag team Be the Booker is how we are going to kick off this round here on a Wednesday night. We've got a four-way tag team series coming up at Full Gear. Tonight we have our own tag team battle, and it's going to begin with the colossal connection of Andre the Giant and Haku. Former tag team champions, the colossal connection. This was Andre at that stage of his career where he could barely move. Like, he was so immobile at this point, it was sad to watch. And they are going to be taking on the tag team of Rob Van Dam and Hook. Hook Van Dam against the Colossal Connection. What are we thinking about this match? I need your input here. I'm torn. My interest was piqued at the idea of Hook sharing a ring with Andre the Giant. Hook and Andre the Giant in the same match. Now, Buzz, that's what I was thinking. It's interesting, but it doesn't deserve a bell. I agree. Moving on. Bell for RVD and Haku? Well, it's too late now. It's too late now. All right, women's Be the Booker. We begin with Sasha Banks, the former women's champion on SmackDown, also a Raw women's champion. Now she's the TBS champion. She's also the New Japan Strong women's champion. She's a former WWE women's tag team champion. She was an NXT women's champion as well, right? Wasn't she? A lot of championships on this woman's resume. And yet, She hasn't connected. In AEW, it hasn't clicked. Something is missing. She has to get it back. Let's get Bayley in here. Come on, Sasha Banks against Bayley. Let's run it back one more time. It's going to be Sasha Banks one-on-one with Mandy Rose, the former NXT Women's Champion. Well, Mandy did show improvement during her time in NXT. She's not the wrestler that Sasha is, but she did show improvement. Main event time. Here we go. There he is again. Look at this. You saw him on the screen before, and now he's back. It's Sting. But not just any Sting. It is Surfer Sting with the bleach blonde hair, the bleach blonde crop top. There he is. Now, I can almost tell just based on looking at an image what year it's from. And I'm looking at this image of Sting. Look at the young Tony Schiavone there. Look, he looks like a baby face, this guy. I'm going to guess that image is from 1993. I'm going to say 93. All right, here we go. Sting in the main event, man, where he belongs. But who will he be wrestling? He's going to be taking on Kane. WWF Champion Kane. The original Kane. 98 Kane. 98 Kane and 93 Sting. Or 94, whatever year it was from. There's a fucking match. There you go. The funny thing about that, though, Sting wrestled Kane, but not as Kane, obviously. He was Bruiser Mastino. And so the two of them did technically wrestle in WCW in the early 90s. It might have been 1990. And it was Sting and Bruiser Mastino, but that was a young Glenn Jacobs. So we got the match. It just wasn't Kane in his final form. But that right there, folks, is how you book a main event. Now, I'm curious. I have to just sit here. What kind of stipulation we could come up with here? What stipulation for Sting against Kane? They are going to have on a pole, bro, a pole match between Sting and Kane. Russo ruins everything. Hey, there's Kane. There's Libertarian Kane right there in the corner of the screen, Corporate Kane. There he is. I was hoping for a cool stipulation like Inferno match, Hell in a Cell match. On a pole, bro. What would you even put on the pole? You got Baby Russo there on the pole. That's one way to ruin the match. See, this is what happens when Vince Russo gets the book back. This is what happens. Be careful what you wish for. I thought picking a stipulation would be fun, and we ruined it. A few more super chats here. Oz and Glorious with the five says, the two randos in the ring when Scott Hall invaded WCW would be featured weekly and or in this in a trios faction, if 2024 Tony Khan was booking back then. Well, as I recall, I want to say that it was Mike Enos was in the ring. I don't remember who the other guy was, but I'm almost positive Mike Enos was in there, one half of what used to be the Beverly Brothers. Somebody will fact check me on that if I'm wrong. I don't remember who the other guy was, but I'm almost positive he was one of them. Drakeo with the $20 super chat. Hey, Solo, hope you're well. Love the podcast and everything that you do. Greetings from Puerto Rico. I have a question. Do you think that AEW can thrive without the Young Bucks? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not a matter of, will they thrive? Can they thrive? That's going to be up to Tony Khan and his booking and his creative direction. But does Tony Khan and AEW need the Young Bucks to survive and to thrive? No, he does not. So the answer is yes, absolutely. Oz and Glorious, yes. So I just read your chat. Thank you, brother. And Power Spying Games, yesterday was my mom's birthday. Well, tell your mom I said happy birthday from the Sala Monster. That means more coming from me than it does even from you. That's a very special birthday greeting there. So tell her I said hello, and I hope she had a very nice birthday. So the next time I'm going to be live with you is going to be for SmackDown on Friday night for the post show. You can come right back here to the channel. We'll be talking about the latest in the Bloodline saga as we head into War Games. Will they do more segments on Friday similar to what they did on Monday, where you have different Bloodline members courting members of the SmackDown roster, potentially, to be the fifth man? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, but remember, Raw next week is taped. We'll be here live then, too, but we got Seth Rollins against Bronson Reed, and we have Bron Breakker defending the Intercontinental title against Sheamus. Those two matches are official for next Monday, but first we have to get through SmackDown on Friday, and I hope you will come on back. Austin, very sorry to hear that. He says that... need some prayers. My girlfriend's six-year-old son died in a car crash last Saturday, and we buried him on Friday morning. Well, that is very sad. I'm very sorry to hear that. I don't know what the circumstances were, but that sucks. That is awful. So I'm thinking about you, Austin. I don't really have any words for it. It's just terrible. Groovy Goose, yes, I just saw your message here. Groovy Goose with a $4.99. Perhaps Moxley wanted to seize TBS because he thought it stood for the Blood Station. You know, we haven't seen Moxley bleed in a while now. He has shed that gimmick. I can't remember the last time he bled in a match. Maybe he has no more blood. Maybe Moxley has finally run out of blood. I don't know how he's able to stand up. Yeah, you really can't say that about Moxley anymore. When was the last time that you saw him bleed in a match? I can't remember. Watch the Batman. You know what? I got to watch. That's right. I got to watch the Batman. I got to find time to watch the Batman. Actually, you know what I need to do? And everybody should do this. Go back. If you already watched it, rewatch it. The first season of Squid Game. Because season two is coming. Season 2 of Squid Game on Netflix is dropping the day after Christmas. On what would have been my father's birthday. My father's 68th birthday. I love Squid Game. I'm going to rewatch it. And I'm looking forward to Season 2 very much. And it's funny, too, because when I got done watching Squid Game for the first time, you know, Netflix will recommend similar shows to you. It's a good thing they did because I never would have known about this show. It's a very similar kind of show, but I really enjoyed it. And there were two seasons or three? Two, I think. But it's a show called Alice in Borderland. Love that show. If you're into those types of shows, check that out. Check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. And just watch it with the subtitles. Don't go for the English dub. Those are awful. It's a foreign show, but you got to watch it and just have the subtitles on screen. And believe me, it's better that way. Justin says Steve Dahl and Mike Enos in the Hall Invasion. See, I always remember Mike Enos. I knew I remembered him. I just couldn't remember who the other person was. Cobra Kai, yeah. I never got into Cobra Kai. I probably should give that a shot. I hear great things about that. A lot of good TV out there. Unfortunately, can't always say that about these wrestling shows. But what can you do? You try for the next one. Because there's wrestling all day, every day, it feels like. So if you get one bad show, there's another one coming up the rear, and you hope that one's better than the one that came before it. That'll be SmackDown on Friday. Be well. Stay safe. See you guys there. Come on back. Hang out. And I will see you then right here live on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up on your way out. Take care, guys.